Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Knowing is Knowing. I'm your host, Rashad Young, and as always, I appreciate you all tuning in to a brand new episode. Super excited for today's interview. Today, I have Melissa, also known as Millennial in Debt. We talk about her journey in content creation, financial tips on how to be successful in making more money, saving more money, breaking down debts, regardless of how much money you make, and more importantly, how to be successful in the content creation space. So if you like that type of thing, so if things are important to you, this is definitely the episode for you. And as always, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite audio platform. Until next time, peace.
I'm really grateful that you're taking the time. I know people are always busy doing something. And so social media is interesting. I've known about you. I know about your fall. I'm very excited to know more about your story, especially since it seems like you like to talk about money, which I think is.
I do. That is the brand. I talk about money all the time, all day, every day. So I'm really happy to get into.
Yes. I don't know. Of course, appreciate yourself. For those who do not know who you are, who are you?
So I am Melissa, also known as Millennial in Debt. I help millennials and Gen Z secure their bag, essentially, and reshape their relationship with money. So I teach them all about managing their debt, paying off debt, home ownership, things like credit, all of those. Everything finance, I kind of make it simple. And so people have access and can become future millionaires.
Yeah. So how did we get to this point? We always had a crazy thing about money. Is there a crazy backstory that got us to this financial literacy? So things of that nature.
Yeah. So I am a first generation Haitian American. I'm also the eldest daughter. And so it was kind of always up to me to do everything the right way, to kind of lead by example. And so I went to college, graduated, became a teacher. And 3 years after I graduated, I wanted to purchase my first home. I wanted to move out of my parents' home. And I spoke to a realtor. I live in New York. And the realtor was basically like, you're not going to get approved for anything because you have too much debt. And I was just like, but I only have student loan debt and I pay it off every month. Like, I'm not missing a payment. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't even have a savings account at that point. I had no business trying to buy a house. And so he recommended that I come back and try again later when I lower my debt to income ratio, which is a term I had never even heard of. And his second recommendation was to reach out to my loan provider. And so when I reached out to my student loan provider, I was surprised to find out that I actually owed more money than I borrowed, even though I never missed a single payment, even though I was paying every month on time. And the loan provider was like, well, you're on an interest-only payment plan. Again, another term I was unfamiliar with. And I was just like, what is going on? Everyone seems to have everything all together. Everyone seems to understand all this adulting, and I am failing at every single step. And so it was really in that moment that I sat down with myself, harsh reality of what my relationship with money looked like and what changes I needed to make in order to achieve the goal of home ownership, achieve the goal of paying down my loans. So that's really when it started. So back in 2013, and I started reading any books I could get my hands on. I started really learning and teaching myself about money. And I created the Millennial in Debt web series, which was kind of like poking fun at myself. But really was an educational web series with a little bit of humor to teach people about different things like going on a job interview, securing your first credit card, all of those things that we don't really talk about that much publicly and that we didn't learn about in high school. I put it on full blast and people really were interested and captivated by how I was sharing the information. And that's kind of how Millennial in Debt was born, just from my own ignorance of things I didn't know and my own just like ridiculous experiences in the past.
Man, that's really crazy. And one, I think that's super cool. It's cool to learn things in real time. And then also to, I guess, sounds like you kind of began the content creation part of your life in that experience, like in real time. I feel like a lot of people don't necessarily get a chance to do it because you kind of see the end result. So like somebody talking to you now, it's like, okay, well, this person seems more established, but not really realizing like I was once in your shoes before. So it sounds like that's what you want to do. If I could be wrong, did you have a blog before we got into this phase where you like a natural hair blogger or something of that nature?
Yes, I was a natural hair blogger. So my best friend and I shaved our heads back in 2013. And we were like, well, we should talk about this. We should share this. And so we created a natural hair space. And I got into like the beauty blogging, content creation. So I've been content creating for 11 years. But then I pivoted into finance in early 2017. And so everyone's always just like, what? I'm like, yeah, I used to talk about hair and makeup and things like that. And now I talk about Roth IRAs, but still on the internet. I've been on the internet for quite some time.
So with the internet, obviously the biggest thing I think with people in content creation is like monetization. How do you make money, right? Is it truly that easy? Is it that difficult? Like in your experience, with all the amount of experience you have, like what would you say for people who are trying to get into that space and make some money?
That is a very good question. And no, it is not easy. And I always tell people, do not quit your day job to be a content creator immediately. You really have to have some substantial income coming in consistently before you could jump out and make that leap. Because so many things come with being a full-time content creator. You are essentially an entrepreneur. Not essentially, you are. You are an entrepreneur and you're going to have to pay for your own health insurance. You're going to have to cover both ends of taxes, which is why I always talk about taxes and money. So there are things that we don't really understand because we've never been business owners or entrepreneurs before, especially as a first gen. So I tell people, so I am full-time content creator now, but that was from 2022. And I've been making content since 2013. And so I think it's really important if anyone wants to get started in the content creation world that they really understand that one, they need to have a passion for it, or they need to have a passion for something specific, because there are months where you're not gonna make a single dollar, or the money's gonna be really low, and you have to keep pushing and keep creating in order to get to those $10,000 months, which everyone's always talking about on the internet, or those $20,000 months. Every month is not going to be a $10,000 month as a content creator, but having that passion behind it and also the know-how to monetize in different ways is really going to set you apart, and is really going to help you monetize, because everyone's monetized without, you know, burning out.
Yeah. Would you say that certain apps and platforms are different than the other? Like, I know a lot of people are like anti-Instagram right now because they, you know, see more money on TikTok. Some people are, you know, Threads people, Twitter, I mean, X. Like, is there each platform different when it comes to that?
Absolutely. I think each platform serves a different purpose, to be honest. And that's why I said when you start with that passion, you're going to find an outlet or a platform where that passion comes alive the best. And so for myself, I've always been really creative. I really loved videography and editing and all those like cool transitions. I love those things. And so for me, initially, Instagram Reels, when that came out, I think in 2020, I loved it. I was just like, oh, this is so cool. Because at the time, TikTok was very much still like the lip syncing and the dancing. I was like, oh, I'm not a dancer. And there were a couple of dabbles around with some cool transitions. But when Reels came out, that really was just so exciting because that's something I really love to do. And then my first passion is writing. And so, of course, I gravitate to platforms like Threads. But if you don't love writing, if you love more pictures, or if you really have to find your passion and what you love to create. And I think that's the platform that you will do the best on. And each platform pays differently. Straight up. So YouTube, from my experience, is the highest rate of exchange when it comes to views. Instagram, for me, has been the lowest. And I like to be so transparent. I was just talking about this recently, how I had a reel go viral that got 1.6 million views, and Instagram paid me $189. I've had a couple of I know, so absurd. I was just like, this is why the platforms like are a stream of monetization, but they're not my main stream of monetization, because I don't own that platform. They get to decide how much they pay me.
They pay you.
Yeah. And so, of course, with TikTok, I feel like has a better rate of exchange for finances for paying you. But TikTok has all these like loopholes, right? So there are some times where you might have a video with 5 million views, but only 500,000 of those views will count for monetization. So they have all these things where it's just like, oh, these views are invalid, or oh, this video has to be over a minute for you to be monetized, or you have to have over 10,000 followers for you to be monetized. So it's every platform is going to be very tricky and have its own rules and regulations. So for YouTube specifically, I know you have to have 1,000 subscribers and you have to have 4,000 watch time, like minutes of watch time. And that's really what gives you the access to monetization. So each platform is going to be different. Really decide on what you love doing. If it's long form, YouTube is going to be your jam. If it's short form and transitions, Instagram and TikTok are going to be your place. If you really love writing and words and connecting with people verbally, Threads, I love Threads. That is my jam. And of course, X used to be that place. But now I am a Threads girl for sure.
Yeah, I was when Threads came out last year, I was like, man, this is the greatest thing ever. And I just felt like it just kind of waved off. And then when I came back to it, I just had like this weird inkling. So just a little context about me. I've been doing content creating or podcasting of some sort for about 5-6 years now. And I kind of hit this wall where I was just like, I'm kind of tired of trying to figure out something that works for me, but I've always enjoyed interviews. So I gave it another shot and a lot of people were reaching out and I saw you. And I was like, oh, okay, so maybe there's always more than I think I can get from this. I think that people's stories are really inspiring. Truly, I think to get a chance to connect with somebody I've never met before and talk to from one or two threads to just hear something I think is really cool. And so when it comes to money itself, in today's time, in today's economy, what do you say for those younger people, man, that are trying to, you know, they're trying to go to college, they're trying to get advanced degrees, they're trying to build businesses, and they can't even afford to get an apartment. You mentioned struggling to the home part in 2013. Now I feel like it's worse than 2024 going forward. How do you think they can become better in that space to become more financially literate and successful?
Absolutely. So I think first of all, it is much more difficult. I did end up purchasing my home in 2019. And even then, so 2013 would have been the best, easiest time. 2019 definitely was like a moment of luck because I definitely would not be able to afford my home now. Not in this housing market. It doesn't matter how much financial literacy I had. I just simply would not be able to afford it. So I think any young adults right now who want to improve their relationship with money, they want to rent an apartment, they want to start a business or get a degree, go to college, you really are going to need two things. Well, three things. The first thing I always say, you need a high yield savings account. And you want to start there. You can put your emergency savings in there because that is going to be your money that you can access quickly. And that is going to be the money that you're going to essentially save for anything that, like, let's say a deposit for a home or you need 3 months rent, whatever it is. You're going to put in a high yield savings account because a high yield savings account is going to offer you a higher interest rate than a traditional bank account. So a traditional bank account is going to offer you 0.001%. You're going to make a couple of pennies a year. Whereas it fluctuates. High yield savings interest rates fluctuate. But in the last 3 years, we've hovered between 3-4% interest, which is a nice chunk of change. And you can park your money there. And if you need it, you can grab it. If not, if you want to put in a CD, it's also a really great space. The second account I always recommend, especially for young adults, and because you have the time ahead of you, is a Roth IRA. You can get a Roth IRA as soon as you have any type of income coming in. So if that's a part-time job, when I was teaching in high school, I had my seniors opening up Roth IRAs because they were like, oh, I have a part-time job. I'm like, cool. Let's open up that account because in 20 years or in 25 years, when you can retire as a millionaire, you will be so thankful that you started that Roth IRA at 18 years old or at 20 years old. And when you started that early, you don't need to contribute a ton of money because you have the time on your side. So if you want to start off with $20 a month, $25 a month, that is amazing because you will end up being able to retire at 55 with a giant jackpot of money. And not have to work until you're 90 years old. So first, high yield savings. Second, a Roth IRA. And third, they are going to need multiple streams of income. And I am not someone who promotes hustle culture because hustle culture really leads to burnout so fast. And I very much value self-care and me time. And I can't be doing 45 million things. But I'll give an example. As a teacher, I wasn't making a lot of money. And I really wanted to buy a home. And I really wanted to pay off my student loans. I simply could not do that with my teacher salary. It wasn't going to happen. And so at first I was like, okay, hustle culture. I'm going to do 35 side hustles. I'm going to do everything. I'm going to walk dogs. I'm going to tutor. I'm going to do it all. And I was just like, oh, but how am I going to be engaged with my friends, my family? How am I going to sleep? How am I going to work out? How am I going to eat? How am I going to live life if I'm doing 35 side hustles once I get off of work? It wasn't practical. And so what I ended up doing was leaning into selling my lesson plans and unit plans because it did give me a new stream of income, but I didn't have to go out and do a ton of different things. I was already lesson planning and unit planning. It was already a part of my 9-to-5 job. So that was a way for me to earn additional income to go towards the down payment on my home, to go towards paying off my student loans. And in 2018, I paid off my final student loan. I paid over $100,000. And that was with the help of selling my lesson plans and unit plans. So if you know that you need to increase your income and you need a side hustle, or you want to have passive income, look into things that you're already doing, or look into talents and skills that you already have that aren't going to take too much of your time, right? So if it's going to take an extra 2-3 hours a week, that's fine. For even 4 to 10. I'm like, 4 to 10 hours, that's fine. But if you're going to have to be 35, 45, 55 hours just to make a couple of extra dollars, it may not be worth it to do that specific side hustle. So really choose a side hustle that is aligned with your schedule and aligned with your skill set.
That's actually really smart. I was thinking about that concept, like, yeah. Wow. So I taught briefly. I taught elementary for like 6 months. That's why I said briefly. It was a short that,
it counts.
Yeah. And then higher ed called me, and then counseling called me, and I'm finishing up to be a therapist now. So yeah, it made sense. But it was just like, I didn't think about that. And I always think about it too, like hustle culture is really, it's really interesting. But the simple fact that you mentioned 35 different things. I see videos of people working 8 to 5, and then they're working another 7, 8, 9, 10 hours, you know, most of their days, 20 hours a day is spent working, and they're not making enough to meet, especially where you live, like you mentioned, New York or California, and these other places. So talk to me about the adversity part with money. I think something that you mentioned is all these great different things, these plans, these steps, you paid off student loan debt. And I also think that people will hear this and they feel inspired. And then there's also people who will hear this and be like, I've been trying this for years. How do you get out of that cycle? Because student loan debt, I mean, I still have them. I'm still in school. And I think about, like, man, like at some point I am going to have to tackle this thing. Right. So how did you navigate through all those things to get to that point where you paid it off?
Initially, and I always say this because it's like, oh, this is such a motivating story. Thank you. But I, at that time in 2013, I was 25 years old. There definitely weren't any like finfluencers. It wasn't really it was still taboo to talk about money online. It wasn't a lot of people who look like me or sound like me talking about money. And I remember reading The Broke Millennial by Erin Lowry. And that was the first book I ever read by, one, a woman talking about money. And two, she was talking about money in a way that I could understand. So I didn't feel stupid. I didn't feel like I was behind. I didn't feel like I just couldn't, you know, do this anymore. Because initially when I spoke to that real estate person, I was just like, wow, I have 2 degrees and I'm so dumb. Like, there's no way I'm going to pay off the student loans. I'm never going to move out of my parents' house. I simply just cannot do this. And I think finding people that look and sound like you, finding people who have similar mindsets to you, really helps motivate you and really helps keep you going. And so once I started talking about money, about the things that I was learning, I was so shocked and just so appreciative of my friends and family who were, one, on board with my goals. So if I told them, I can't make it or I can't be a part of this, they understood and they didn't shame me for it. They didn't make me feel bad about it. They were just like, no, we get it. And they also shared their journey with me. And we sort of became a support system for each other. So my best friend graduated from the same college a year after, and we were both dealing with those student loans, both dealing with just like trying to navigate the millennial life and be cool and go on vacation. And it's just like, yo, how is everybody else doing this? And we were like, oh, credit cards, debt, like, okay, let's be a little honest about that. And so I think really finding your group of people, I like to call it my advisory board, finding your advisory board, it could be 5 or 6 people that you love and trust and surround yourself with, really helps to keep you on track. Because there will be dark days. There will be days where you're just like, you know what, YOLO, I'm going to live my life for me. I don't care about these student loans. I don't care about anything. I'm just going to spend, spend, spend. But you really want to have someone in your corner saying, look, today sucks, but tomorrow we're going to get back on track and we're going to, you know, keep working towards our goal. And I'm so thankful that I had that advisory board. So I always tell anyone, if they're like, listen, I've been doing this forever, I can't do this, I'm about to give up, you need an advisory board. You need a group of people that are very like-minded or can tell you, like, listen, just let's keep going. Let's keep pushing. Let's keep motivating. Because if not, it's too difficult. honestly, it is too difficult to do alone, to feel ashamed and embarrassed in a corner, like, I'm never going to finish. Like, no, listen, we're going to go to brunch. We're going to go to brunch on a budget, and we're going to complain, and then we're going to enjoy the rest of the day. That's really how you have to do it, because life is hard. So get an advisory board.
I love that. I want to take a quick turn. One thing I did not hear you mention about, I'm just curious about your thoughts. What are your thoughts on the cryptocurrency? Are you a fan of crypto? Are you unsure about crypto? You're a Bitcoin user?
I am not in the crypto space. And I always kind of steer clear of the conversation, not because I think anything is wrong with crypto, but simply because I'm just not educated enough to comment on it. And so I never want to discourage anyone from learning or participating in it. I have crypto books that I am, you know, reading and trying to navigate myself, but I don't feel educated enough to speak on it. So that is why I cannot do
it. That is a great answer. I was just curious. I know everybody is fine. Some people are pro, some people are anti.
I'm a novice, so I don't even know enough to be pro or against.
I appreciate the transparency, because somebody else could have lied and gave you your whole spiel, and I got this course for $20 you can talk about, so that's cool.
I'm reading books with just with the rest of y'all.
Yeah. So in your space now, what do you think is your ultimate goal as you continue to like learn and navigate and build your brand? Like, what do you think is your ultimate goal in the finance space?
That is a beautiful question. At some point in the near future, hopefully, I would like to do two things. And it's obviously back to the community, because I was a teacher for so long. That is my thing. I want to be on some sort of board in New York specifically, maybe nationally at some point, but in New York specifically, where I am curriculum developing and curriculum creation for high school and middle school financial literacy. So I was a curriculum developer and instructional designer in high school. So it is a passion of mine already outside of money, and now combining both. So I definitely want to make sure that financial literacy is mandated, especially on the high school level, because I think we really need that to be more prepared for our adult lives. So that's one. And two, at some point, I would like to create some form of scholarship for students going into college. I don't know what will be the regulations. I kind of like the whole first gen eldest daughter vibe. I did go to a Catholic all-girls school, so we were very like pro women education. So that is something I am looking into and establishing. So those are really where I want to take the brand, into curriculum development for financial literacy and a scholarship for higher education.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's great. Speaking of just women in finance, I've always been curious, for a woman that has a broader presence in finance, have you noticed a difference as far as people, as far as how they treat you, have questions, like the perspective, like, do you feel more valued in the space? Do you feel like you've had to prove yourself 2 or 3 times harder to get your voice heard and things of that nature? I'm always curious about that experience.
That is a very good question. We're going to make this a very politically correct answer. I think, yes, because of the way I look and sound, that I have had to work harder to prove that I am educated and that I do know what I am talking about. Because I like to, again, as a former educator, I like to make sure that everyone has access to information and they can understand it. So if I am doing a transition reel and like changing out of clothes and whatever and doing my makeup, that doesn't take away from the information that I'm sharing. And so I think a lot of times people are like, oh, she's just a beauty blogger. And it's just like, no, I'm very educated. I have a lot of experience in these things. So I do think, yes. And that is the politically correct answer.
I'll read between the lines.
I'm all for the
PC. So growing up for you, was there like a particular experience that kind of, I guess, created this passion? I think anybody who gets an education itself, I feel like you gotta be have a big heart, or be a little bit crazy, or both. Was there something that just kind of created this passion inside of you to want to create such an impact to the community and the youth especially?
Yes. So my brothers, every time they are listen to any of my podcasts, they're always just like, oh. But my brothers, I have two younger brothers, and everything that I've built in my professional career and my entrepreneurial career has really been, one, to make them proud, but also to make sure that anyone that looks and sounds like them feels comfortable. And so one of the reasons that I did become a teacher is my middle brother, he wrote an essay for college writing about why public school teachers don't care about their students. He did end up getting a scholarship, and it was a good essay. I didn't even help him with it at all. But it broke my heart, and it really made me feel like he didn't feel seen or he didn't feel appreciated in his classes and in his classroom. Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that anyone that looked and sounded like him or was in that same position had someone that was on their side, had someone that was on their team in the classroom. And I like to think over my 11-year career and the schools that I chose to work in, that I absolutely were successful in that and being on the side of the students and making sure that their voices are always heard and, you know, put on a pedestal, because I just don't think that is often done, especially in specific types of neighborhoods in New York.
No, yeah. So, yeah, tell me about your experience in New York. So I'm assuming you're born and raised.
Yes.
Born and raised in New York. Okay.
What part of New York? I am from Queens, born and raised in Queens. I currently reside in Long Island, so the far, far less cool place. But a lot of people tell me I give off Brooklyn vibes, and I will take it. I will take it. Born and raised in Queens, Brooklyn vibes, and currently living in boring Long Island.
Okay. So, you know, so I definitely got the Brooklyn vibes part. My family's from Philly, so I always have an infatuation with the East Coast. And when I hear people talk about their passion for New York, I've always said if I had ever had an opportunity for 1 year at least, I would love to live in Brooklyn. So I definitely got the Brooklyn vibe. So I heard. You know, what do you think keeps you in New York when there are so many places in the United States you can visit? Like, what about New York is bigger than home to you?
What a beautiful question. So I do a lot of traveling, and for some reason, like, I will be in New York. Like, let's say I'm in New York for a few months and haven't traveled. I will complain and talk so much mess and just all whatever. And the minute I leave, I will be like, and I'll enjoy wherever I am, and I'll have a great time for sure, especially during winter, because I do not like winter. So whenever I travel in the winter and get to go someplace warmer, I'm always thrilled. But a part of me always feels like something's missing, and that is because New York is always on. And I really appreciate that in my best days and my worst days and my confused days, I can go outside and have a different experience just because I'm in New York. And I don't think many other places can offer that. And so a lot of times when I'm talking about content or creating content for things you can do that are affordable, I have to really keep in mind that not everyone lives in New York. Because I'll be like, yeah, you could do like so many things going outside for free. And they're like, girl, I live in Kentucky. Like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, like literally yesterday I was making a video on affordable things you could do for the holidays, like budget-friendly things you can do or traditions. And I was like, yeah, you can go walk the streets of, and I was like, oh no, they don't have that street like everywhere. But it's just, so I have to be very mindful, but I really do love the energy of anything can happen at any moment in New York. That definitely has its cons as well. But overall, it is something I really do love about my city.
That is funny. Kentucky, no shade, but I get it.
No shade. I love Kentucky. Kentucky was one of my favorite states that I've ever visited. But I just simply know that if I needed to go, like, grab a sandwich at 11 p.m., it's not happening.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. I'm born and raised in St. Louis. That's where I live. So it's like, when I see sort of content of people in the coast or the West or Chicago, you're like, you know, we don't have that part. That
I try to be so mindful. I really do. I try to be like, okay, everywhere is not 24/7. You need to be mindful. So I try. I definitely try.
Well, I got to ask you this, because I did a year in Chicago and they swear that this is the case. Is Chicago, is New York pizza better? Is New York pizza the best pizza in the country?
Absolutely. Without hesitation, 100%. And I have the expertise because pizza is my absolute favorite food. And I eat it on purpose everywhere I go. Just to check. And I'm sorry, I love Chicago. Chicago is one of the cities that I would actually move to. So people ask me like, oh, would I leave New York? Where would I go? Yeah. LA is like one. I'm like LA, definitely, because like that's kind of the little. And then I'm like Chicago. The winters are a little tough, but I really did love Chicago so much. But that pizza is not matching New York pizza. It's not happening.
I just had to ask. Yeah, I got a lot of friends who live in Chicago still, and so St. Louis. I'm not trying to put us in there, right? But like I take a lot of pride in my pizza where we're from, and I'm like, if I'm going to pick a strong second, I'm going to say New York. And everybody in Chicago was very, very offended by it. It's like I'm telling you, there's nothing really special about the place. And I know when they hear this, they go,
"I'm so sorry. Please don't fight me, Chicago." But listen, New York pizza, bagels, and hot dogs. New York, really, those three. And I'm not even a hot dog person, but you just can't. I don't know. You can't get a better bagel than in New York, and you're definitely not getting a better pizza outside of New York.
Right. That's funny. I did have one final question I'd like to ask all of my guests. What do you think makes you human?
Oh, your questions have been phenomenal, I must really say. So thank you for having such great questions. I think what makes me human is my ability to fail and still continue on the mission. And that's fail in anything, not just like the brand and entrepreneurship, but fail in anything. Like, I never approach anything saying like, I'm so perfect, I'm going to do such a great job, even though I might be really skilled at it. Like, I really love creating content. I really love being a teacher. I feel like I was really good at it, but I never approach it from a space like, I can't fail. I approach it from like, I can fail. And when I do, I will still have to continue with why I started this overall. And I think that's my most human quality is like, I don't really need to chase success. It will happen. It will happen, but it's not the end all be all. The goal and the mission is always going to be the final destination for me. So I think that's my most human quality or trait.
I love that. As always, I appreciate you joining. I appreciate the insight you've given. I know people can find you because you're pretty known, but for those who don't know where you are and your username and that stuff, where can people find you in the social media
space? I am Millennial in Debt everywhere. So TikTok, Instagram, Threads, millennialindebt.com if you like more blog style writing, and then Millennial in Debt on YouTube if you like more long form. I got something for everybody. I do. I try. You know, I try multiple different entry points for learning.
Yeah. Well, Melissa, I appreciate you taking the time. And for those who listen to the podcast, make sure to subscribe to it on your favorite audio platform, checking out on YouTube and all that great stuff. And as always, peace and blessings.